Chapter 4, Toward a New World, 800 to 1500. Key Events. As you read, look for the key events in the history of medieval Europe and the Americas. The revival of trade in Europe led to the growth of cities and towns. The Catholic Church was an important part of European people's lives during the Middle Ages. The Mayan, Aztec, and Incan civilizations developed and administered complex societies. The impact today. The events that occurred during this time period still impact our lives today. The revival of trade brought with it a money economy and the emergence of capitalism, which is widespread in the world today. Modern universities had their origins in medieval Europe. The cultures of Central and South America reflect both Native American and Spanish influences. Section 1. Europe in the Middle Ages. Voices from the Past. In 1075, Pope Gregory VII issued the following decrees. 1. That the Roman Catholic Church was founded by God alone. 2. That the Pope alone can, with right, be called universal. 3. That he alone can depose or reinstate bishops. 10. That the Pope's name alone shall be spoken in the churches. 11. That his name is the only name in the world. 12. That it may be permitted to him to depose emperors. 19. That he himself may be judged by no one. 22. That the Roman Church has never erred, nor will it err to all eternity, the Scripture bearing witness. Select Historical Documents of the Middle Ages, Ernest F. Henderson, Editor, 1892. The popes of the Catholic Church exerted their power, as is evident from these decrees. Christianity was a crucial element in medieval European society. The New Agriculture. In the early Middle Ages, Europe had a relatively small population. In the High Middle Ages, 1000 to 1300, however, population increased dramatically. The number of people almost doubled from 38 million to 74 million. What caused this huge increase in population? For one thing, conditions in Europe were more settled and peaceful after the invasions of the early Middle Ages had stopped. This increased peace and stability also led to a dramatic expansion in food production after 1000. In part, food production increased because a change in climate during the High Middle Ages improved growing conditions. In addition, more land was cultivated as peasants of the 11th and 12th centuries cut down trees and drained swamps. Changes in technology also aided the development of farming. The Middle Ages witnessed an explosion of labor-saving devices. For example, the people of the Middle Ages harnessed the power of water and wind to do jobs once done by humans or animals. Many new devices were made from iron, which was mined in various areas of Europe. Iron was crucial in making the carruca, a heavy-wheeled plow with an iron plowshare. Unlike earlier plows, this plow could easily turn over heavy clay soils. The shift from a two-field to a three-field system of crop rotation added to the increase in food production. In the early Middle Ages, peasants divided their land into two fields of equal size. One field was planted, while the other was allowed to lie fallow or remain unplanted to regain its fertility. Now, however, lands were divided into three parts. One field was planted in the fall with grains, such as rye and wheat, that were harvested in the summer. The second field was planted in the spring with grains, oats and barley, and vegetables, peas and beans, that were harvested in the fall. The third field was allowed to lie fallow. The three-field system meant that only one-third rather than one-half of the land lay fallow at any time. The rotation of crops also kept the soil from becoming exhausted so quickly. The manorial system. Landholding nobles were a military elite whose ability to be warriors depended on their having the leisure time to pursue the arts of war. Landed estates, located on the fiefs given to a vassal by his lord and worked by peasants, provided the economic support that made this way of life possible. A manor was an agricultural estate run by a lord and worked by peasants. Although free peasants continued to exist, increasing numbers of free peasants became serfs, or peasants legally bound, to the land. Serfs had to provide labor services, pay rents, and be subject to the lord's control. By 800, probably 60% of the people of Western Europe were serfs. Daily life of the peasants. The life of peasants in Europe was simple. Their cottages had wood frames surrounded by sticks, with the spaces between sticks filled with straw and rubble, and then plastered over with clay. Roofs were simply thatched. The houses of poorer peasants consisted of a single room. Others, however, had at least two rooms, a main room for cooking, eating, and other activities, and another room for sleeping. There was little privacy in a medieval peasant household. The position of peasant women in manorial society was both important and difficult. They were expected to work in the fields and at the same time bear children. Their ability to manage the household might determine whether a peasant family would starve or survive in difficult times. The seasons of the year largely determined peasant activities. Each season brought a new round of tasks. Harvest time in August and September was especially hectic. A good harvest of grains for making bread was crucial to survival in the winter months. In every season, of course, the serfs worked not only their own land, but also the lord's lands. A new cycle of labor began in October, when peasants worked the ground for the planting of winter crops. In November came the slaughter of excess livestock, because there was usually not enough food to keep the animals alive all winter. The meat would be salted to preserve it for winter use. In February and March, the land was plowed for the planting of spring crops, oats, barley, peas, and beans. Early summer was a fairly relaxed time, although there was still weeding and sheep shearing to be done. Reading check, explaining. How did the seasons of the year affect peasant activities? The revival of trade. Medieval Europe was an agricultural society in which most people lived in small villages. In the 11th and 12th centuries, however, a revival of trade and an associated growth of cities changed the economic foundation of European civilization. Cities in Italy took the lead in the revival of trade. While Venice and other northern Italian cities were busy trading in the Mediterranean, the towns of Flanders, along the coast of present-day Belgium and northern France, were doing the same in northern Europe. By the 12th century, a regular exchange of goods had developed between Flanders and Italy. As trade increased, demand for gold and silver coins arose at fairs and trading markets of all kinds. Slowly, a money economy, an economic system based on money, began to emerge. New trading companies and banking firms were set up to manage the exchange and sale of goods. All of these new practices were part of the rise of commercial capitalism, an economic system in which people invested in trade and goods in order to make profits. Some historians have called this the beginnings of a commercial revolution. Reading check. Analyzing. How were increased trade and the development of a money economy related? The growth of cities. The revival of trade led to a revival of cities. Towns had greatly declined in the early Middle Ages, especially in Europe north of the Alps. Old Roman cities had continued to exist, but had dwindled in size and population. With the revival of trade, merchants began to settle in the old Roman cities. They were followed by craftspeople or artisans, people who had developed skills and saw a chance to make goods that could be sold by the merchants. In the course of the 11th and 12th centuries, the old Roman cities came alive with new populations and growth. Many new cities or towns were also founded, especially in northern Europe. Usually, a group of merchants built a settlement near a castle because it was located along a trade route, and because the lord of the castle would offer protection. If the settlement prospered and expanded, new walls were built to protect it. The merchants and artisans of these cities later came to be called burghers or bourgeoisie, from the German word burg, a walled enclosure. Medieval cities were small in comparison with either ancient or modern cities. A large trading city would number about 5,000 inhabitants. Italian cities tended to be larger. Venice, Florence, Genoa, Milan, and Naples each had almost 100,000 inhabitants. Even the largest European city, however, seemed small alongside the Byzantine capital of Constantinople or the Arab city of Baghdad. Life in the medieval city. Medieval towns were surrounded by stone walls. Because the walls were expensive to build, the space within was precious and tightly filled. Thus, medieval cities had narrow, winding streets, houses were crowded against one another, and the second and third stories were built out over the streets. The danger of fire was great. Dwellings were built mostly of wood before the 14th century, and candles and wood fires were used for light and heat. Medieval cities burned rapidly once a fire started. The physical environment of medieval cities was not pleasant. The cities were often dirty and smelled from animal and human waste. Air pollution was also a fact of life from the ever-present wood fires. industry, and guilds. The revival of trade enabled cities and towns to become important centers for manufacturing a wide range of goods, such as cloth, metalwork, shoes, and leather goods. A host of craft activities were carried on in houses located in the narrow streets of the medieval cities. From the 12th century on, craftspeople began to organize themselves into guilds or business associations. Guilds came to play a leading role in the economic life of the cities. By the 13th century, there were guilds for tanners, carpenters, bakers, and artisans of almost every other craft. There were also separate guilds for specialized groups of merchants, such as dealers in silk or money, banking. Reading check. Identifying. List three physical characteristics of medieval cities. The Papal Monarchy. Since the 5th century, the popes of the Catholic Church had been supreme over the affairs of the Church. They had also gained control of territories in central Italy that came to be known as the Papal States. This control kept the popes involved in political matters, often at the expense of their spiritual duties. During part of the 800s and 900s, the authority of the popes declined as the feudal lords became more powerful. Bishops and abbots, for example, began to obtain their offices as grants from nobles, not the pope. As vassals, these church officials carried out the usual feudal services, including military duties. By the 11th century, church leaders realized the need to be free from the interference of lords in the appointment of church officials. Pope Gregory VII decided to fight this interference. Elected pope in 1073, he was convinced that he had been chosen by God to reform the church. To pursue this aim, Gregory claimed that the pope's authority extended over all the Christian world, including its rulers. He also asserted the right of the church to appoint clergy and run its own affairs. If rulers did not accept this, the pope would remove them. Gregory VII soon found himself in conflict with Henry IV, the king of Germany, over these claims. For many years, German kings had appointed high-ranking clerics, especially bishops, as their vassals in order to use them as administrators. Without them, the king could not hope to maintain his own power in the face of the powerful German nobles. In 1075, Pope Gregory issued a decree forbidding high-ranking clerics from receiving their offices from lay or secular leaders. Although Henry IV opposed the pope's actions, the new papal policy ultimately won out. The popes of the 12th century did not give up the reform ideals of Pope Gregory VII, and they were even more inclined to strengthen papal power and build a strong administrative system. During the papacy of Pope Innocent III in the 13th century, the Catholic Church reached the height of its political power. Innocent III's actions were those of a man who believed that he, the Pope, was the supreme judge of European affairs. For example, he forced the King of France, Philip Augustus, to take back his wife and queen after Philip had tried to have his marriage annulled. Reading check. Summarizing. Briefly describe the conflict between Pope Gregory VII and King Henry IV. New religious orders. In the second half of the 11th century and the first half of the 12th century, a wave of religious enthusiasm seized Europe. This movement led to a rise in the number of monasteries and the emergence of new monastic orders. Both men and women joined religious orders in increasing numbers. A new activism. In the 11th century, the most important new order to arise was the Cistercian order. It was founded in 1098 by a group of monks who were unhappy with the lack of discipline at their own Benedictine monastery. Cistercian monasticism spread rapidly from southern France into the rest of Europe. The Cistercians played a major role in developing a new activist spiritual model for 12th century Europe. While Benedictine monks spent hours inside the monastery in personal prayer, the Cistercians took their religion to the people outside the monastery. More than any other person, Saint Bernard of Clairvaux embodied the new spiritual ideal of Cistercian monasticism. Arise, soldier of Christ, arise! Get up off the ground and return to the battle from which you have fled. Fight more boldly after your flight and triumph in glory. Women were also actively involved in the spiritual movements of the age. The number of women joining religious houses grew dramatically. In the High Middle Ages, most nuns were from the ranks of the landed aristocracy. Female intellectuals found convents a haven for their activities. Most of the learned women of the Middle Ages, especially in Germany, were nuns. This was true of Hildegard of Bingen, who became abbess of a religious house for females in western Germany. The Franciscans and Dominicans. In the 13th century, two new religious orders emerged that had a strong impact on the lives of ordinary people. They were the Franciscans and the Dominicans. The Franciscans were founded by St. Francis of Assisi. Francis was born to a wealthy Italian merchant family in Assisi. After having been captured and imprisoned during a local war, he had a series of dramatic spiritual experiences. These experiences led him to abandon all worldly goods and material pursuits and to live and preach in poverty, working and begging for his food. His love for others soon attracted a band of followers. The Franciscans became very popular. They lived among the people, preaching repentance and aiding the poor. They undertook missionary work, first throughout Italy and then all parts of Europe and even in the Muslim world. The Dominican order was founded by a Spanish priest, Dominic de Guzman. Dominic wanted to defend church teachings from heresy, the denial of basic church doctrines. Heretical movements became especially widespread in southern France. Dominic believed that a new religious order of men who lived lives of poverty and were capable of preaching effectively would best be able to attack heresy. The church's desire to have a method of discovering and dealing with heretics led to the creation of a court called the Inquisition, or Holy Office. The job of this court was to find and try heretics, and it developed a regular procedure to deal with them. The Dominicans became especially well known for their roles as examiners of people suspected of heresy. Reading check. Analyzing. What impact did the Franciscans and Dominicans have on the lives of people in the 13th century? Popular religion in the High Middle Ages. We have witnessed the actions of popes, bishops, monks, and friars. But what of ordinary people? What were their religious hopes and fears? What were their religious beliefs? The sacraments, or Christian rites, of the Catholic Church were central in importance to ordinary people. These rites, such as baptism, marriage, and the Eucharist, or communion, made the Church a crucial part of people's lives from birth to death. The sacraments were seen as means for receiving God's grace and were necessary for salvation. Only the clergy could administer the sacraments, so everyone who hoped to gain salvation depended on the clergy to help them achieve this goal. Other church practices were also important to ordinary people. One practice involved veneration of saints. Saints were men and women who were considered especially holy and who had achieved a special position in heaven. Saints were able to ask for favors before the throne of God for people who prayed to them. Their ability to help and protect people in this way made saints very popular with all Christians. Jesus Christ's apostles, of course, were recognized throughout Europe as saints. There were also numerous local saints who were of special significance to a single area. The Italians, for example, had Saint Nicholas, the patron saint of children, who is known today as Santa Claus. New saints emerged rapidly, especially in the intensely religious atmosphere of the 11th and 12th centuries. Medieval Christians also believed that a pilgrimage to a holy shrine produced a spiritual benefit. The greatest shrine, but the most difficult to reach, was the holy city of Jerusalem. On the continent, two pilgrim centers were especially popular in the High Middle Ages. Rome, which contained the relics of Saints Peter and Paul, and the town of Santiago de Compostela, supposedly the site of the tomb of the Apostle James. Local attractions, such as shrines dedicated to the Blessed Virgin Mary, also became pilgrimage centers. Reading check. Examining. Why were saints important to Christians in the High Middle Ages? The rise of universities. The university, as we know it today, with faculty, students, and degrees, was a product of the High Middle Ages. The word university comes from the Latin word universitas, meaning corporation or guild. Medieval universities were educational guilds or corporations that produced educated and trained individuals. The first universities. The first European university appeared in Bologna, Italy. A great teacher named Ernurius, who taught Roman law, attracted students to Bologna from all over Europe. Most were men who were administrators for kings and princes. Women did not attend universities. These men were eager to learn more about the law in order to apply it in their own jobs. The first university in Northern Europe was the University of Paris. In the second half of the 12th century, a number of students and masters or teachers left Paris and started their own university at Oxford, England. Kings, popes, and princes thought it honorable to found new universities. By 1500, Europe had 80 universities. University curricula. Students began their studies at a medieval university with the traditional liberal arts curriculum, or course of study. This curriculum consisted of grammar, rhetoric, logic, arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. Teaching at a medieval university was done by a lecture method. The word lecture is derived from Latin and means to read. Before the development of the printing press in the 15th century, books were expensive. Few students could afford them, so the teachers read from a basic text and then added their explanations. No exams were given after a series of lectures. When a student applied for a degree, however, he was given an oral examination by a committee of teachers. These examinations were taken after a 4 or 6 year period of study. The first degree a student could earn was a Bachelor of Arts. Later, he might receive a Master of Arts. After completing the liberal arts curriculum, a student could go on to study law, medicine, or theology. Theology, the study of religion and God, was the most highly regarded subject of the medieval university. A student who passed his final oral examinations in one of these areas was granted a doctor's degree. Reading check. Explaining. Why were most early university courses taught as lecture classes? Architecture. The 11th and 12th centuries witnessed an explosion of building in medieval Europe, especially the building of churches. The cathedrals of the 11th and 12th centuries were built in the Romanesque style. Romanesque churches were normally built in the basilica shape used in the construction of churches in the late Roman Empire. Basilicas were rectangular buildings with flat wooden roofs. Romanesque builders replaced the flat roofs with long, round, stone-arched structures called barrel vaults. Because stone roofs were heavy, Romanesque churches required massive pillars and walls to hold them up. This left little space for windows, so Romanesque churches were dark inside. A new style called Gothic appeared in the 12th century and was brought to perfection in the 13th. The Gothic cathedral remains one of the greatest artistic triumphs of the High Middle Ages. Two basic innovations of the 12th century made Gothic cathedrals possible. One innovation was the replacement of the round barrel vault of Romanesque churches with a combination of ribbed vaults and pointed arches. This change enabled builders to make Gothic churches higher than Romanesque churches, as if they were reaching to God. Another technical innovation was the flying buttress, a heavy, arched support of stone built onto the outside of the walls. Flying buttresses made it possible to distribute the weight of a church's vaulted ceilings outward and down. This eliminated the heavy walls that were needed in Romanesque churches. Gothic cathedrals were built then with relatively thin walls, which could be filled with magnificent stained glass windows. Reading check. Explaining. What were the benefits of flying buttresses? The late Middle Ages. Turning point. In this section, you will learn how 14th century Europe was devastated by the terrible plague known as the Black Death. This plague greatly decreased the population of Europe and brought about significant economic and social changes in the late Middle Ages. The Middle Ages in Europe had reached a high point in the 13th century. European society in the 14th and early 15th centuries, the late Middle Ages, however, was challenged by an overwhelming number of disastrous forces. Especially catastrophic was the Black Death. The Black Death. The Black Death was the most devastating natural disaster in European history. One observer wrote that father abandoned child, wife abandoned husband, one brother abandoned another, for the plague seemed to strike through breath and sight, and so they died. People were horrified by the plague, an evil force they could not understand. Bubonic plague was the most common form of the Black Death. It was spread by black rats infested with fleas carrying a deadly bacterium. Italian merchants brought the plague with them from Caffa on the Black Sea to the island of Sicily in October 1347. The plague had spread to southern Italy and southern France and Spain by the end of 1347. Usually the path of the Black Death followed trade routes. In 1348, the plague spread through France, the Low Countries, modern Belgium, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands, and Germany. It ravaged England in 1349 and expanded to northern Europe and Scandinavia. Eastern Europe and Russia were affected by 1351. Out of a total European population of 75 million, possibly as many as 38 million people died of the plague between 1347 and 1351. Especially hard hit were Italy's crowded cities, where 50 to 60% of the people died. In England and Germany, entire villages disappeared. The death of so many people in the 14th century had severe economic consequences. Trade declined, and a shortage of workers caused a dramatic rise in the price of labor. At the same time, the decline in the number of people lowered the demand for food, resulting in falling prices. The decline of church power. The popes of the Roman Catholic Church reached the height of their power in the 13th century. Then, in the 14th century, a series of problems led to a decline in the church's political and spiritual position. The European kings had grown unwilling to accept papal claims of supremacy by the end of the 13th century. This is evident in the struggle between Pope Boniface VIII and King Philip IV of France. This struggle led a French pope in 1305 to take up residence in Avignon, in southern France. From 1305 to 1377, the popes lived in Avignon. Sentiments against the papacy grew during this time. The pope was the bishop of Rome, and it seemed improper that he should reside in Avignon instead of Rome. When the pope did return in 1377, another disaster soon struck. After his death, a group of Italian cardinals elected an Italian pope, while a group of French cardinals elected a French pope. The existence of two popes caused the Great Schism, which lasted from 1378 to 1417. It divided Europe. France and its allies supported the French pope, who had returned to Avignon. England and England's allies supported the pope in Rome. The pope was widely believed to be the true leader of Christendom. When each line of popes denounced the other as the Antichrist, one who opposes Christ, people's faith in both the papacy and the church were undermined. Although the schism was finally ended in 1417, the church had lost much of its political and spiritual authority. Political crisis and recovery. War and political instability were also problems of the late Middle Ages. The Hundred Years' War between England and France, which lasted from 1337 to 1453, was the most violent struggle during this period. It took the efforts of a simple peasant girl, Joan of Arc, to help the French armies and finally bring an end to the war. In the 14th century, France, England, and other European states faced serious problems. In the 15th century, recovery set in as rulers attempted to reestablish the centralized power of monarchies. Some historians have spoken of these reestablished states as the new monarchies. This term applies especially to the monarchies of France, England, and Spain at the end of the 15th century. Unlike France, England, and Spain, the Holy Roman Empire did not develop a strong monarchical authority. The failures of German emperors in the 13th century had made Germany a land of hundreds of independent states. In Eastern Europe, rulers also found it difficult to centralize their states. Religious differences troubled the area, as Roman Catholics, Eastern Orthodox Christians, and other groups confronted one another. Since the 13th century, Russia had been under the domination of the Mongols. Gradually, the princes of Moscow rose to prominence. Under the great prince Ivan III, a new Russian state was born. Reading check. Explaining. How did European rulers begin to recover politically after the Hundred Years' War? Critical thinking skill builder. Analyzing primary and secondary sources. Why learn this skill? Suppose for a moment that a devastating tornado has struck a nearby town. On television that night, you watch an interview with an eyewitness. The eyewitness begins to cry as she describes the destruction of her own home and neighborhood. The next day, you read a newspaper account that describes the tornado's path. Is one of these accounts of the same event more accurate than the other? Learning the skill. To determine the accuracy of an account, you must analyze its source. There are two main types of sources, primary and secondary. Primary sources are produced by eyewitnesses to events. Diaries, letters, autobiographies, interviews, artifacts, and paintings are primary sources. Because primary sources convey personal experiences, they often include the emotions and opinions of participants in an event. Secondary sources use information gathered from others. Newspapers, textbooks, and biographies are secondary sources. Secondary sources, written later, help us to understand events in a larger context or time frame. To determine reliability of a source, consider the type of source you are using. For a primary source, determine who the author is and when the material was written. An account written during or immediately after an event is often more reliable than one written years later. For a secondary source, look for good documentation. Researchers should cite their sources in footnotes and bibliographies. For both types of sources, you also need to evaluate the author. Is this author biased? What background and authority does he or she have? Finally, compare two accounts of the same event. If they disagree, you should question the reliability of the material and conduct further research to determine which can be corroborated with other reliable sources. Practicing the skill. Read the following excerpts and answer the questions. Finally, the two groups met. When all was ready, Montezuma placed his feet, shod in gold-soled, gem-studded sandals, on the carpeted pavement, and advanced to an encounter that would shape both his own destiny and that of his nation. Montezuma had servants bring forward two necklaces of red shells hung with life-size shrimps made of gold. These he placed around Cortez's neck. From Cortez, by William Weber Johnson, 1975. When we had arrived at a place not far from the town, the monarch raised himself in his sedan. Montezuma himself was sumptuously attired, had on a species of half-boot richly set with jewels, and whose soles were made of solid gold. Montezuma came up to Cortez, and hung about his neck a chaste necklace of gold, most curiously worked with figures all representing crabs. From an account by Conquistador Bernal Diaz del Castillo, 1519. 1. What is the general topic of the two sources? 2. Identify the primary source. 3. Is one account more reliable than the other? If so, why? How do you know?